Funding for Think comes from SMU's Master of Liberal Studies, a graduate education flexible enough to allow you to explore what matters most to you. More at smu.edu/MLS.
You're listening to Think on KERA 90.1. I'm Chris Boyd. What will the U.S. healthcare system look like, and what will it cost by the end of the decade? By some accounts, healthcare in America will change more over the next 10 years than it has in the past 50, as new mandates for insurance coverage affect both consumers and providers, and an astonishing 20% of our gross domestic product is spent on health. Whether we agree with the new health laws or not, many of us would like to see health outcomes improving as spending rises. But my guest today says the policies failed to address some of the most serious threats to vitality and longevity in 21st century America. Steve Jacob is former publisher of the Fort Worth Star-Telegram Suburban Editions, and he's an adjunct professor at the University of North Texas School of Public Health. His new book is called Healthcare in 2020, where uncertain reforms, bad habits, too few doctors, and skyrocketing costs are taking us. Steve, welcome back to Think.
Thank you very much, Chris. It's a real privilege to be here.
During the initial debates over these new policies, the media typically used the phrase healthcare reform. It sounds like you believe a more accurate description would have been health insurance reform.
Yes. I think initially they were going for health reform, particularly President Obama. But I think as he continued to compromise and as the bill was sort of tweaked, I think that wrung most of the health reform measures out of the bill, and what we ended up with is health insurance reform. So that really the overarching goal and frankly the overarching result of this particular law is simply to provide access for a lot more people. The idea that we expand Medicaid, which is the health insurance program for the low income, and then also health insurance exchanges, which will subsidize people up to about 60,000 household income. So between those two measures, we will end up with about 32 million more people with health insurance by the end of the decade. So there's some good things about that and some bad things about it. So really, it's expanded the cost, expanded the access, but the two major problems I think that are not addressed in health reform or are addressed very weakly are the access problems, and that we're having 32 million more people out there and not any more doctors, or very few more doctors, and then also the skyrocketing costs of healthcare. Healthcare inflation has run about 2% ahead of consumer price index since 1960. So that has become sort of an overriding factor when we consider healthcare costs. So that about 20 cents out of every dollar in 2020 will be devoted to healthcare.
So why is the pace of inflation for healthcare outstripping the pace of inflation overall, which right now is quite modest in this country? Why is healthcare getting more expensive if we're not getting more and better services?
Well, most research points to really two factors in terms of what increases healthcare costs. Number one factor is medical technology. In a lot of other industries, technology lowers costs, but really that's not really the case in healthcare. So that when more expensive equipment is purchased and deployed, actually the cost of care rises. Now, once it's determined that Medicare, Medicaid, in other words, the government and insurance companies will pay for certain procedures, that technology gets widely diffused. Mm-hmm. All the hospitals and all of the outpatient clinics that can buy it do buy it because they know if it's being reimbursed, they can, in fact, use it and increase revenue. And so the quirk about the medical economy or healthcare economy is that it's supplier induced. You know, like going to your auto mechanic. If your engine is rattling, you have no idea what it could be. It could be something minor. It could be something major. And if the mechanic says you need to do X, Y, Z to your engine and it's going to cost you $2,000, you tend not to question that. And you have no basis to question it. And that's really kind of the same way with your doctor, particularly if you go in and you have a problem and, the, you know, one doctor could say, you know, just, you know, get some more exercise and better your diet. Or they may say you really need these invasive procedures. You tend to do what that doctor says. Now, when this technology is purchased and widely diffused, what happens is it tends to be used. It needs to be cost justified. So, you know, spread across the economy, the healthcare economy, that's very expensive. We're doing, you know, two and three times the number of MRIs we were doing 10 years ago. And population health did not dictate that needed to be done. Mm-hmm. We're doing a lot more CT scans. All of these things are being employed. They're not necessarily, you know, bettering outcomes. They're also not necessarily, it's not because there's an epidemic of problems that in fact require this. Another big factor is what I call market power. A lot of healthcare systems every year negotiate with health plans, with insurance companies. And if you dominate your market and you need to be in that health plan's network, you can pretty much dictate your own price. For example, in Dallas-Fort Worth, if you take Texas Health Resources, Baylor, and HCA, they have two-thirds of the market share. So it's very difficult for health plans in Dallas and Fort Worth not to include them. I'm not privy to what those negotiations are, but I'm sure that THR and Baylor and HCA go into with very strong negotiating position. There are health systems, healthcare organizations on particularly in like Massachusetts and California, they were able to dictate 20 and 30% price increases. And you know that their expenses did not rise that much. So they were able to basically express that market power. And then you aggregate that across the country, that too becomes a big problem. So it's the price. So, you know, boiling down those two factors, it's the price and it's the number of units or number of services that are delivered. It's you know, it's high school economics. Price times units equals cost.
I have to say, I feel reasonably well informed on this subject, Steve, but I was astonished to read that somewhere between 30 and 40% of medical services provided, medications prescribed, appear to have no documentable beneficial impact on patient health.
Yes. There are many procedures that are done and science has proven later on that they're not worthwhile that continue to be done because they get paid for. A good example is what's called angioplasty. That's where, you know, you've just had a heart attack and they need to put in stents, which open up your arteries. If that's done within 24 hours, that can save your life. After 24 hours pass, it is of no medical benefit. It doesn't do anything. So there have been studies that have come out since then that state just that. Yet, I wouldn't say significant, but a portion of angioplasties that are done in this country today are still being done after 24 hours. And that's despite the fact the American Heart Association has guidelines against it. American College of Cardiology has guidelines against it. So there are many, many guidelines that, you know, people could say are being violated, that science says does not is of no benefit, that are still being done. So, you know, it really gets down to payers having to put their foot down and say, look, science says this doesn't work. We're not going to pay for angioplasty after 24 hours. Now, some cardiologists would argue that, you know, the science is not precise, or they'll talk about, well, the methodology used in the study was not the right methodology, et cetera. So there's always wiggle room in science. Nothing's ever absolute. But aggregating all those things, all those tests that really don't need to be done, aggregating a lot of care that's delivered that doesn't need to be delivered, that really does add up to almost 30%. That 30% is a figure that keeps getting bandied about in health policy circles, and it's not really been refuted that much. A lot of that is also administrative waste. There's a lot of paperwork in healthcare, a lot of what they call fragmented care, where you get a test done at Dr. A and you're sent to Dr. B, and that Dr. B does the same test that Dr. A did.
Test,
exactly,
yeah. Mm-hmm.
Because he didn't know Dr. A did it, or somehow he didn't get the memo. The paperwork wasn't passed along. So there's a lot of that that goes on too. A lot of things fall through the crack.
And we haven't made much progress on universal health records that can travel with us.
More and more, electronic health records will become a bigger and bigger part of healthcare during this during this decade, because right now the government, through the stimulus package in 2009, offered billions of dollars for healthcare organizations to be able to install these. And there are still incentives out there to do that. But right around 2015, healthcare providers will be penalized if they are not if they don't have electronic health records backing up the care. So, you know, right now there's a carrot out there, but it's going to become a stick.
Steve Jacob is my guest. He's former publisher of the Fort Worth Star-Telegram Suburban Editions, and he is adjunct professor at the University of North Texas School of Public Health. We're talking about his new book, Healthcare in 2020, where uncertain reforms, bad habits, too few doctors, and skyrocketing costs are taking us. We'll resume our conversation with Steve in a couple of minutes and invite you to join us now on the lines open at 1-800-933-5372. We also invite you to participate in helping us reach our overall goal for KERA for this fundraising drive. We have $267,841 exactly left to raise. And before 2 o'clock today, we would like to raise $4,400. So you think, listeners, we are counting on you for contributions of $4,400. You decide what your portion of that $4,400 is. Somewhere that above zero. And, you know, $4,400 would be
nothing,
great.
Please.
More than nothing. Yeah, you're clearly your part of this is not nothing, because you are listening. You are part of the audience, and we are providing this show for you. So go online now to KERA.org or call 1-888-694-6931. Hello, Jeff Whittington, senior producer of Think.
Hello, Chris. What a great conversation. We are offering copies of Steve's book, Healthcare in 2020, which I like the title, too, because it's kind of, you know, it has the double, sort of the double, what's it going to be like in the future, and what does it look like, and clear, you know, straight ahead vision.
You're getting the thumbs up. Clearly, you have understood the title.
Right. I like
the only one that connection.
Really, really. Well, we are. It is a public radio station. No, I'm kidding, Steve. No, it's really the conversation is fascinating. It's important, and obviously there are some folks who believe that it's important. We've heard from Betty Vickers in DeSoto, Lloyd Eaker in Dallas, Rachel Buckley in Colleyville. Thanks also to Deborah Anderson in Azle, Susan and Aubrey Malfers in Dallas, Andy Vance and Chris Gills in Irving, and Phyllis Williams in Dallas.
Thank you so much, Judy Kaufman in Dallas. Thank you, Rebecca Shaw in Plano, and Teresa Ketzner in Richardson, and thanks to Karen Roberts in Dallas. We would love to read your name when you make your contribution at 888-694-6931, or you go online to KERA.org. Again, you can choose to receive a copy of Steve Jacobs' new book, Healthcare in 2020, when you make a contribution at or above the $120 membership level. It's a great guide if you are still trying to get your brain around what is going to be changing, what will not change, what the goals are for American health, and why the new law may fall short, whether or not it survives a Supreme Court challenge. Great piece of journalism here, and we are pleased to be able to offer it to you when you make this contribution to the station.
Steve's a local writer, and you know, it's always nice to be able to have a local journalist and author here in the studio with us. And of course, his book is out. It's available out there in the world. If you want to get it sooner, you can get a copy anywhere, I'm sure. And you can still make your $120 contribution to KERA today.
Yes, please do.
Choose something else. Choose five reusable KERA shopping bags, and you'll get those in a couple of weeks. And go out and get your very own copy of Steve Jacobs' book, Healthcare in 2020. Or if you'd like to receive it as a thank you gift, again, make that $120 contribution at 888-694-6931 or contribute at KERA.org.
Public radio really is a shared endeavor. We all believe that it should be here. We believe that the community is stronger with a source of civil discourse, of intelligent thought, and of sincere effort to understand the truth and find meaning in things without overlay of opinion. Your contribution makes it possible at KERA.org or at 1-888-694-6931. Back in 2 minutes with Steve Jacob.
Funding for Think comes from SMU's Master of Liberal Studies.
You're listening to Think on KERA 90.1. I'm Chris Boyd. We're speaking this hour with Steve Jacob, who is adjunct professor at the University of North Texas School of Public Health and author of the new book Healthcare in 2020, where uncertain reforms, bad habits, too few doctors, and skyrocketing costs are taking us. Join the conversation by calling in to 1-800-933-5372 or send email to think at kera.org. Steve, I want to talk about this. We've talked about increasing access to health care, ensuring that more Americans can have insurance coverage. But apparently there is no guarantee whatsoever that our premiums are not going to continue to rise significantly every single year.
You're absolutely right, Chris. You know, these rising costs, it could almost make health reform obsolete. You know, in the sense that if cost of care is going out of – spending out of control government's not going to be able to subsidize that to the point where it almost regardless that we're going to continue to just simply accommodate healthcare costs. I mean, at this point, there is no healthcare budget per se, in the sense that here's what we're going to spend and we're not going to spend anymore. Again, Medicare and Medicaid are entitlements, and as long as care is being provided, we pay the bill. So right now, healthcare costs are being accommodated, but it's very scary looking as we go forward how much more of the federal budget and state budgets that healthcare is going to take up. In my book, there's a graphic where I aggregated 50 state budgets, and what you saw was 15 billion increases in Medicaid. And then cuts and everything else, particularly, corrections or prison systems were pretty much the same. But those cuts are coming from kindergarten through 12 education, higher education, public transportation, safety net services. All these things are being cut to accommodate healthcare. And we're not willing to put limits on that yet.
So it may turn out that we decide that that's an appropriate way to find the money for these things, but your point is that we need to understand that this still has a cost.
Absolutely. That is absolutely the case. And, you know, right now, anytime you talk about, you know, we talked about the 30% that's considered of no benefit. Anytime you start talking about that, lawmakers are really fear the R word, rationing. In mm-hmm. other words, you know, that rationing sort of implies you're withholding needed medical care. But there are a lot of things that shouldn't be done, I'm suggesting, because it's not only of no benefit, it's harmful. If you're getting a procedure or taking a medication, if it is of no benefit, the only other outcome is that it's potentially risky. So that if you're getting angioplasty after that 24 hours, that can kill you. Mm-hmm. There's a number of those kinds of things in healthcare that we really, I think, need to address. But at this point, we're not willing to.
You know, I think a lot of people would think, well, is my doctor getting rich? And the answer is, according to your characterization, probably not.
No.
So where's this money going?
Well, it's being spread throughout the healthcare system. And, you know, frankly, we talked about medical technology. It gets really pretty much reinvested back into the system. If you look around the country, even around Dallas-Fort Worth, the former CEO of the hospital, Harris HEB, Hirsius Bedford, used to call his hospital, construction project masquerading as a hospital because it's always under construction. And I think if you look around Dallas-Fort Worth, it's all that's being plowed back into more and more capacity. And again, because it is supplier-induced demand, once that capacity is built, it tends to get filled. There is a saying in healthcare, a bed built is a bed filled.
And part of the reason we need more capacity is because not simply because the population is growing, but because we continue to get sicker. Talk a little bit about the role of preventive health care. And there are really three levels of preventive health care that you describe here.
Yeah, there's primary, what's called primary prevention, secondary prevention, and tertiary prevention. And all of those things are really important. Now, you know, some people think preventive care in fact saves money. There's been research done on this, and really only about 20% of preventive services actually do have a payback. You know, things like, you know, tobacco cessation, immunizations, all those things have a huge return on investment. But, you know, prevention is important simply because of those patients or consumers who are activated, who are concerned about their health. Once they understand that there is a problem, they take care of it immediately. And only about half, even, you know, there's many, many people in this country, a significant portion that have free preventive services, yet only about half of them use them. So it's very important that they, in fact, use those things. And in fact, that's part of health reform, that all health plans have to pay what's called a first dollar payment for preventive services. And they recognize that it's important. Not that there's necessarily going to be a payback, but the fact that there is going to it's a very important part of health. You know, many people say, well, gee, preventive services don't, you know, pay for themselves. But the thing is that almost all healthcare does not pay for itself. You know, if you get that angioplasty I was telling you about, by getting that, there's not going to be a return on investment other than the fact that it might save your life if it's done early enough. So there are those levels of prevention. Also, if you've got a chronic condition, and that gets down to the tertiary level, that you need to keep your condition under control. If you've got diabetes, you have to make sure that your blood glucose levels are under control, the fact that you exercise. And as long as you do that, you can keep your personal health care costs down and you keep yourself out of the hospital. You're not running to the emergency department to deal with some sort of crisis. You're not going to end up with a heart attack or stroke. And so that kind of prevention is also critically important because chronic conditions account for about 75% of healthcare dollars.
1-800-933-5372 is our telephone number. You can join us on the phones there, or you can send email to think@kera.org. Let's go to Steve in Euless. Hello, Steve.
Hey, Chris. Another wonderful show.
Thank you.
You knock them out of the park every day.
Thank you.
Thank you very much. My comment and question, number one, is we don't have a healthcare service or healthcare industry. We've got a repair industry that really focuses on past problems, and the fee per service is the motivator behind escalating costs, along with the technology. But just this last weekend, there was a fascinating article in the Star Telegram talking about the golden rule, and it exposed the percentage that healthcare providers were spending on actual care versus the premiums they were collecting, some as low as 49%, most of them averaging in the 60s, 70s, and the rule was, hey, you got to spend 80%. So there was a rebate under the Affordable Care Act that was going to be coming back to the people that were paying, the payers. And the healthcare industry said, let us wait a little bit and pay you back over time and not now and not this year. I'd like a comment on that and the previous about health versus repair, even though you covered part of it. Thank you.
Thanks for your call.
Steve, that's a really good analogy. There's a pie chart in my book that talks about what determines premature death. How do we, you know, what are the factors? And medical care is really only about 10% of it. And Steve's right. It's sort of the repair shop for the body. And this, again, is based on a research article that was done in Health Affairs Journal in 2003. But 40% is based on behavior. And that's those things where, you don't smoke and you're of normal weight and you eat nutritionally. 30% is genetics. But that's not necessarily destiny. There's a saying in healthcare that genetics load the gun, but either behavior or environment pull the trigger. Mm-hmm. So arguably 70% is within your control. 10% is medical care. And then the other 20% is your social circumstances, and that's, you know, are you living in a safe neighborhood? Do you have a high enough income that you can, you know, you can afford heat and nutritious food and all that sort of thing? So, you know, he's absolutely right that's, you know, at this point we're plowing all our money into the repair shop, and we're cutting all those things that arguably promote health, which is education, you know, the social safety net. Public transportation to get people to jobs, because education and income are the two biggest drivers of health.
So obviously, Steve, we will never pass a law that makes it illegal to do what Morgan Spurlock did and eat McDonald's every day, three times a day. And I don't just want to jump on McDonald's. There are a lot of other things people can do that are not good for their bodies. So what power do we have, given our goals to improve health? Ultimately, I think even the people who are cynical about this would like to see health improved in this country.
Yes.
What can we do about behavior?
You know, that's a great point. What I try to do in healthcare in 2020 is kind of point out that the best thing you can do about healthcare costs is to minimize your own costs. That the healthiest 50% spend only 3% of the healthcare dollars. So by doing simple things, which is don't drink to excess, don't smoke, stay of normal weight, exercise. There is only, believe it or not, if you take those four or five behaviors, only 3% of Americans actually do those things.
Follow every single one of those recommendations.
Yeah, every one of those five recommendations. Yeah, so 97% either are overweight, they smoke, or they don't eat well, or they drink to excess, or they're not physically active. So we all have a lot of room to improve. And really, if you simply eat right and maintain a normal weight and you exercise, you cut your risk of heart disease, cancer, and diabetes by 80%. So people don't always want to hear that. They want sort of a silver bullet. But if you do these simple things, you are going to keep yourself out of harm's way.
My guest is Steve Jacob. He's former publisher of the Fort Worth Star-Telegram Suburban Editions, now adjunct professor at the University of North Texas School of Public Health. We're talking this hour about his new book, Healthcare in 2020, where uncertain reforms, bad habits, too few doctors, and skyrocketing costs are taking us. We'll get to more of your calls in a few minutes. If you would like to make a contribution of support to the station that brings you programming like this, this is the ideal time for you to do so. You can go online to kera.org, or you can call 1-888-694-6931. Jeff Whittington joins us now with an update on our goal for the hour and where we are at this point.
Yeah, Chris, we started the hour, thanks, Chris, with a goal of $4,400 for the hour. And we're down to needing just about $3,062, to be precise, in this hour still to make the goal for Think Today, to stay on track to, remember, our overall plan is to stay on track and raise the $700,000 necessary by the end of the day on Friday. That would cut this drive in half compared to last January's 24-day mega pledge drive. We want to go with a slimmed down
version.
Yeah, we're trying to get a little healthier as far as the pledge drive is concerned and do it in half the time.
1-888-694-6931 is the number, or you can do this at kera.org. We have copies of Steve Jacob's book, Healthcare in 2020, available as a thank you today at or above the $120 contribution level. Really interesting piece of work. A lot to think about in this book, in particular about the importance of preventive care and really good habits for all of us, and how they potentially will lead us all to consume fewer healthcare resources. So something to think about as a thank you if you are interested in one right now. $3,062 left to raise for this hour to stay on target. We were making beautiful progress as we started out. We've raised more than $1,300, but we need to keep that momentum going. The funny thing about the word momentum is that really you just have to take one action. But your action contributes to the momentum of other people.
Well, you need to get up and establish some momentum on your way over to the phone.
Exactly. Like a little exercise.
You personally would then have momentum toward the phone.
You know, there are some people, I don't really understand this, who somehow they want to wait until we have like $300 or fewer to raise for the hour. And so we can't get to that small subset of people until you have made your contribution. If you are a believer in public radio, if you believe this is an investment in your intellectual health and your understanding of the world, please make a contribution right now. It doesn't take very much of your time, and the amount of money is entirely up to you. Maybe you're in a position where you can be a Friends-level member at or above $1,500. Maybe you can do $5 a month. A lot of you can do somewhere in between. I think the average gift is something about somewhere around $120, but you know what's right for you. It might be $500 for you. It might be $50 for you.
It's true that many of you can afford to give to the station. And we would just ask that if you can afford to give, and you know if you can afford to give, that you go ahead and do it, because you're listening now, you've been listening to the show, you've been listening to the station for, you know, for probably quite we know just empirically from what you have told us when you have given to the station that many of you listen for 5 or more years before you finally give to your public radio station. So you've been thinking about it possibly for years. And we would ask that if you have the means that you go ahead and do it today. You know, whenever I'm at the store, and I've done it, but you know, you're at the store and you're in the bulk aisle and you see someone, they sort of pull like the hopper on the cashews. They know what a cashew tastes like, but they just want to taste one and make sure that these cashews are going to be, you know, good for my mid-afternoon snacks next week. Well, that's okay, and the store is fine with it, and everyone's done it, right? But you know, if they're going around and then they start, you know, leaning back under the hopper and sort of
if your mouth is positioned under the hopper of KERA,
right? I mean, you know, you've sampled the station.
You've just put a picture in everyone's head.
You've sampled the station. Well, I took your ice cream sample metaphor from the last hour.
Whole Foods is locking up all their displays right now.
You know, you've sampled the station for years, possibly. And, you know, now it's time to go ahead and fill up a sack with your favorite cashews or whatever it is and go over and weigh it and, you know, and pay for it. That's what we're asking you to do today. If you appreciate the healthcare coverage you've gotten from KERA, which this show fits right into, Sam Baker's Monday morning health checkup reports and interviews.
I love those.
It's worth your investment. And we're talking about $5 a month, $10 a month, whatever's right for you.
1-888-694-6931 is the telephone number. You can also go to KERA.org. Perhaps you have a lot of philanthropic organizations on your list of things you give to, and you might think, well, I don't want to add one more. But the truth is, this isn't just any – the model of KERA is that we're serving you directly. This is not even simply doing something wonderful for other members of the community. Making a contribution to KERA is really about paying for your own listening habits, for the things that you actually consume. I don't know why you wouldn't be excited about making a contribution. And I can tell you, lots of people who make their first contribution tell us, oh, you know, it wasn't that bad, and I actually felt great after doing it. So
it's like going to the dentist.
Exactly.
Right. I mean, you should go to the dentist. You should make
twice
your,
a year.
You should make your contribution to KERA. And you, because there are people who can't afford to make a contribution, and you believe in the service, you think it should be here, and so. For everyone, regardless of whether they can afford to contribute. So if you can afford to contribute, go ahead and do it. The number to call, 888-694-6931. That's 1-888-694-6931. Or go online to KERA.org and make your contribution there.
We'll be back in about 2 minutes with Steve Jacob talking about healthcare in 2020.
Funding for Think comes from SMU's Master of Liberal Studies.
You're listening to Think on KERA 90.1. I'm Chris Boyd. Steve Jacob is our guest for this hour. He is adjunct professor at the University of North Texas School of Public Health and author of Healthcare in 2020, Where Uncertain Reforms, Bad Habits, Too Few Doctors, and Skyrocketing Costs Are Taking Us. Steve, this is not a book specific to Texas, but because you're from here, I want to talk a little bit about what this means to our state as opposed to other places.
Well, thanks for asking about that, Chris. Now, I do want to make an offer. If anybody wants to, I wrote an e-book about how health reform affects Texas. And if you want a copy of that, I'll be glad to send that to you free if you want to just email me at steve@unitedstatesofhealth.com. But Texas is anti-reform, as many Texans are, and specifically our governor.
Although we have the largest uninsured population in the country.
That's exactly right. Texas will become will benefit more from health reform than any other state because we have the highest percentage of uninsured Texans. If you take the people under 65, 1 out of 3 adults are uninsured in this state. And so between the expansion of Medicaid and also subsidies on of the health insurance exchanges, you're looking at probably about $13, $14 billion flowing into the state during this decade. Now, if you take Ray Perryman's multiplier effect that every dollar that goes to Medicaid produces 3 more dollars in in terms of economic expansion.
It's in the community and it circulates. Mm-hmm.
That's right. And it's a dollar that comes from outside the state. So you're looking, I think I calculate about $53 billion in economic development dollars or economic stimulus to the state of Texas because of health reform. And so, you know, for all the programs the state has to try and attract business to Texas, any of those efforts dwarf what health reform is going to do for Texas in that respect, because it's going to expand probably to well over 90% the number of Texans who will have insurance. And if you take the expansion from health reform, you also take the growth in our state, which, we're the fastest growing state in the union, we're looking at probably 50% more people with insurance by the end of this decade than 2010 in the state of Texas.
So 50% more people with insurance by the end of the decade, do we have 50% more doctors and nurses and lab techs?
No, we sure don't. So, you know, it's very difficult to turn on a spigot and produce doctors. There's a very, very long...
It takes years and years.
It takes years and years. And frankly, you wouldn't have time to go into this, but a lot of the funding has been cut for medical residencies in the state. So even though they graduate from medical school, we don't have the residencies to accommodate them. So they go out of state and we lose many of them. So if you went into a waiting room a couple of years ago and there were 18 people sitting there, by 2020, there will be 27 people sitting there.
With the same staff in the back.
Yes, right. So between health reform and the aging population, primary care, the demand for primary care is going to go up about 30% within the next 10, 12 years. But the percentage of primary care doctors, and those are the doctors you see first, you know, the family physicians and pediatricians, so that's only going to go up somewhere between 2 and 7%. So there's going to be a real glut of people looking for care.
That doesn't seem to bode well for patient care if doctors have fewer and fewer minutes per patient to spend.
You're absolutely right. And what you're going to find is a lot of alternative ways of treating people. Walmart is looking at doing primary care. Walgreens is also looking at primary care. And they're looking at it from a different standpoint. They don't really want to make money off. They want to just drive traffic into the store, then they can sell them other stuff. So
you go with your earache, and then you get a prescription, and you fill it there.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. Same way with Walmart. And, of course, they also have cheap prescriptions, but they want you to buy, you know, other stuff.
Groceries and big screen TVs.
All the things that Walmart sells. So you're going to see it spill over into those arenas. You're going to see a lot of it spill over into emergency departments because they can't get appointments. So it's going to be kind of a mess.
Let's go back to the phones now. 1-800-933-5372 is our telephone number. We have Romy on the line in Highland Village. Hey, Romy.
Hi, Chris. Thanks for the show.
Sure.
My question is, what role does the speaker think defensive medicine plays in the cost of health care?
You know, all of the research, and I've seen this in more than one study, you know, instinctively you think it would play quite a bit, quite a role in cost.
Let me jump in here. Defensive medicine is doctors prescribing things to make sure that they won't be sued for neglecting to check into something.
That's correct. And essentially, the number I see consistently put on that is about 2% of healthcare costs. So it's really a kind of a small piece of it. Now, many people argue for tort reform, and I agree that there should be tort reform nationally, just like we did here in Texas, but they often argue that it's going to lower healthcare costs, and of course, we don't see that in Texas. There's no evidence that showed once tort reform was passed in 2003 till now that healthcare costs do not, you know, they rise at the same trajectory in Texas as they do everywhere else in the country. So I think that is sort of underscores that research.
1-800-933-5372 is our telephone number. Let's go to Warren in Dallas. Hi, Warren.
Hello. Can you hear me?
I can.
Okay. I was wondering, is it more advantageous for the companies to use the exchange versus not? I mean, it seems like they would save money because, you know, like the company I work for has, like, you know, maybe about 400 people. and you don't have to have these meetings and all these things every year? I'll just take my answer off the air.
Thanks for a call. Yeah, it's a $2,000 fee ultimately for employers that choose not to offer plans to their employees.
And that is a great question, and that's being hotly debated right now among human resources people and businesses, saying do we or do we not continue to offer health benefits? At this point, most of the surveys show that businesses still are going to hang in there. But a lot of it gets down to what is your competitor going to do? And I think that there are certain sectors, certain economic sectors, where it makes some sense to drop health benefits and just simply pay the penalty. And that's for if you have a young workforce, a transient workforce, sort of a lower wage workforce where health benefits really don't make that much of a difference, don't really give you a competitive advantage. That would be like in the retail business. It would be in the entertainment business. Restaurants, these kinds of businesses may well look at this. And to me, I think what you're going to find is it's going to be sector by sector, so that if two or three major players in the restaurant industry decide to drop health benefits, I think you'll see most of the sector do that. At this point, everybody's saying the right things, but when the rubber meets the road in 4 or 5 years, we'll really see what the effect of that is.
And we should say this is no small expense for corporations. You point out the fact that Starbucks spends more on health insurance than it spends on coffee beans. This blew my mind.
It blew my mind, too. When I was amazed when I saw that. That was a story in Business Week a couple of years ago. But that story also pointed out that in many manufacturing businesses, this is the case where they pay more for healthcare benefits than for raw materials. And, of course, in the case of Starbucks, coffee beans are raw material. Mm-hmm. So it's the equivalent of about 40% of a company's pre-tax profits. So they're giving up an awful lot. And really the workers do, too, because when businesses look at salaries and benefits – they tend to – that's one of the reasons our salary increases are so low comparatively the last few years, is because healthcare costs have sort of soaked up the difference.
Do you see anything at all, Steve, to be optimistic about between now and 2020 with regard to healthcare?
I know. It's not a very – it's not a very happy
picture.
Story. It's not a happy story. What's good about health reform is not only is it expanding access, but it's also redressing many injustices in the health system where people with pre-existing conditions cannot get insurance coverage. Mm-hmm. And they're the ones that need it the most. So health reform does that. And so that, you know, frankly, is part of the happy story. But unfortunately, looking at, you know, again, creation of providers that are going to take care of us, and also the costs themselves at this point are kind of out of our reach unless we are willing to have a highly regulated healthcare system. And I don't see that happening. I think is going to happen is through the end of this decade, high deductible health plans will become predominant. Most people will have those. And I think it's really going to put a real crimp on household budgets. And then I think sometime in the next decade, we'll probably end up with some form of universal health care.
Steve Jacob is former publisher of the Fort Worth Star-Telegram Suburban Editions, and he's adjunct professor at the University of North Texas School of Public Health. His new book is called Healthcare in 2020, Where Uncertain Reforms, Bad Habits, Too Few Doctors, and Skyrocketing Costs Are Taking Us. Steve, thank you so much for giving us this hour. Really appreciate it.
Thank you very much, Chris.
Thanks to all of you who have been participating in the show as listeners, as emailers, as callers. We greatly appreciate the fact that you feel tied to this program and that you come to Think every day to find out a little bit more about your world, to learn about expert perspectives on a variety of subjects. We also appreciate the fact that many of you are willing to send a bit of your hard-earned money to us in order to allow us to provide you with this programming. The telephone number to help us make our goal for the hour, which started at $4,400 and is now $2,271 left to raise, is 1-888-694-6931. You can also go online and make make your contribution at kera.org. Perhaps as a thank you gift, you would like to choose a copy of Healthcare in 2020 by Steve Jacob. That's available at or above the $120 contribution level. We also have from the last hour of the program, Jody Cantor's book, The Obamas, available. Your thank you gift is up to you. The amount you contribute is up to you. But we do ask everyone listening to please make a contribution. Hello again, Jeff.
Hey, Chris. The number to call, 888-694-6931. That's 1-888-694-6931. We'd like to wrap this drive up by Friday. And that means you getting involved now will help us get there by Friday evening. You can go online to kera.org. You can make your contribution there. It just takes a couple of minutes to fill out the convenient membership form. Basically, you're filling out the membership form yourself. You're putting your contact information, you know, where we can send your thank you gift, if you want a thank you gift, how much you want to contribute, which credit card you'd like to use, all that. The same information that you would give to the friendly person you'd talk to if you call 1-888-694-6931. There is $2,271 remaining in this hour's goal. That keeps us on track to raise about the $268,000 that's left by the end of the day on Friday. We can get there. But we can only get there if you make your call or online contribution now.
It would be fantastic to hear from a Friends-level donor at this point at 1-888-694-6931. The Friends of KERA are simply people who make contributions to the station of $1,500 a year, which comes out to $125 a month. And there are plenty of Friends on the sustaining membership plan. So if it's something that you think you could afford over the course of a year, but you don't necessarily want to lay out all that money at once, we have ways to make it to work with you on this. Honestly, your contribution, even of a few dollars a month, will make an important impact to KERA. You get to hear every single day how your money is being spent. So please help us get the additional $2,271 we need to raise for this hour by going online now, making your contribution at kera.org.
888-694-6931 or online at kera.org. Okay, Chris, $265,692 is left to raise in the campaign. And as we've said, this whole drive, our goal is to do it in half the time. That means ending on Friday, early Friday evening. $265,692 is all that's left. In this hour, $2,271. That's just, you know, a few of you contributing $200 for your listening to KERA over the year. We can get there if you call. Again, the number is 888-694-6931 or go online to kera.org. And we can send you a copy of Steve Jacobs' book, Healthcare in 2020, Where Uncertain Reform, Bad Habits, Too Few Doctors, and Skyrocketing Costs Are Taking Us.
Your listening to KERA is not an impulse decision. Chances are you not only value public radio enough to count on it every day, but you maybe even plan your listening day. I know there are those of you out there who adjust your lunch schedule so that you can listen to Think or you can listen to anything you ever wanted to know on Fridays. Some of you adjust your commute in the mornings or the evenings to hear a certain segment of Morning Edition or All Things Considered. Regardless of that, I would think about impulse purchases in that you might think to yourself, well, I don't know, you know, $20 a month, am I going to commit to that for a year? I think sometimes about going to, you know, one of those big box grocery type family stores, you know, Target. And it's really easy to make that much impulse purchase every single week if you're shopping for a family on things that you sort of need, but you may or may not absolutely need. You need KERA. So I think committing to, you know, a gift of $5 or $10 or $20 or even $50 a month is worth it because this is an investment in your understanding of the world and your commitment to education and lifelong learning.
I'm sorry, kids. No junk food this week because we're giving to KERA.
I think that's reasonable. It would be good for all of us.
I'm trying to make you laugh, Chris.
Yes, I know. No, we're my kids are very unfortunate in that junk food is not. I'm even anti-juice. But,
wow.
Yes, but you know, a little bit now and then is okay.
But we are pro you calling in and you contributing online at kera.org. Have all the juice you want after you've made your contribution at kera.org or at 1-888-694-6931. $2,186 left to raise by 2 p.m. We can get there. We got 2 minutes to do it. We can get there with your call right now, your online contribution. That's how we do it. And if you've been considering giving at a higher level, as Chris said a few minutes ago, maybe the Friends of KERA would be right for you. I've heard that Diane Rehm is coming to town this
spring. That is the rumor. Yeah, that would be fantastic.
And there will more than likely be a Friends event around that. And if you join the station right now, with a $1,500 contribution or $125 a month sustaining membership, you would be a friend of KERA. You'd be getting invited to those kinds of things here at the station. You get a tour of the station. You can get 7,500 American Airlines Advantage miles as well when you join as a friend of KERA. And that would get us just to within about $686 of our goal this hour. If that's right for you, please make that contribution right now at 1-888-694-6931.
If all of you listening right now who think you really ought to make a contribution but you just haven't gotten around to it, if all of you will just take action, just push past that wondering why or whether or when you're going to do it, we will absolutely make this goal. So we would ask you to please seriously consider a contribution to KERA, if not as a Friends member, at some other level that makes sense for your budget. You might choose to receive a copy of Healthcare in 2020 by Steve Jacob when you make a contribution at or above $120. Or we do have Jody Cantor's book from the last hour, The Obamas.
Yeah, also available with a contribution of at least $120. The number to call, 888-694-6931. It's 1-888-694-6931. Or click and join. Do it right now at KERA.org.
Public radio is here for you every day. KERA is here for you day after day, year after year. We ask you once a year to help us and phone in a contribution at 1-888-694-6931 or make that contribution online at KERA.org. We really appreciate your support.